Yay. I have no disclosures. I'd like to first acknowledge all the village it takes to do this kind of project, and I want to highlight especially Judy Schley, who's in our audience, who's the principal investigator on this project, as well as our colleagues in the Denver Public Schools, without which we could not obviously have done this project. Since 2008, influenza vaccine has been recommended annually for children 6 months and older. Given the increased number of visits required for actually accomplishing universal vaccination, it may not be realistic to accomplish all of this within the medical home without additional delivery sites. School-located influenza vaccine programs may be, in fact, instrumental in achieving universal vaccination delivery in school-aged children. A variety of school-located immunization delivery programs have previously been described. Most recently, some wonderful programs in Hawaii, earlier in Minnesota, Tennessee, and Maryland. However, all previous school-located programs have either relied on donated influenza vaccine from manufacturers, or they have focused efforts exclusively on VFC-eligible children, and therefore vaccine costs have not been an issue. So in this, the present study I'm going to describe was a school-located influenza vaccine program that attempted to bill third-party payers. And our objectives were to assess the feasibility and effectiveness of this program in terms of outcomes such as the percent of students who received at least one flu vaccine and the percent that were fully vaccinated, and to assess measures related to sustainability, principally the estimated costs of this kind of program and the extent of reimbursement we were able to get from third-party payers for both vaccine and administration costs. The study was conducted from November of 2009 to March of 2010. In an urban public school district in Denver, 20 elementary schools were targeted for the project. The total enrollment at these schools is almost 10,000, with a range of 300 to 650 per school. And the schools are predominantly low income. Eligibility for free and reduced lunch, the median is 87%. And the range is 25 to 98%. So these are predominantly low-income public schools. Our community vaccinator was the Denver Public Health Program, and this the vaccinator delivered vaccines to consented students at participating elementary schools during the school day and then billed third-party payers for the services delivered. Two clinics were held per school, and seasonal flu vaccine was offered at both clinics. Both the intranasal and injectable vaccines were available. And since we were studying influenza, the pandemic occurred. This always happens whenever you study flu. Something weird happens. So this was the year of H1N1. And H1N1 injectable vaccine was offered at the second clinic but was not available at the first. Okay, so this briefly gives you an overview of the elements of the program itself. Pre-clinic, students brought home consents to their parents. There were separate consents for H1N1 and seasonal. Health records and vaccine records were requested as part of the consent process, and if consented, vaccine registry and insurance information was then checked pre-clinic. On the day of the clinic, students were escorted by grade to the clinic during school hours. Their identity was verified by the vaccinator. Vaccine was administered, and vaccines were recorded in the state registry. Post-clinic, the vaccinator billed for vaccines given, and sometimes this required multiple billings. The reasons for denial of bills was captured, and most importantly in this program, parents were not billed or any vaccine or administrative fees if these claims were denied or if they were uninsured. Cost estimates were done by micro-costing, and this meant we collected cost data on all immunization-related activities, pre-clinic, clinic, and post-clinic. We included costs of immunization-related supplies and the time to perform billing. And we collected costs separately for each participating entity, the community vaccinator and the school district. and cost outcomes are presented as cost per vaccine delivered. And we also calculated the percent of costs that were reimbursed within each insurance type for vaccine purchasing costs and administrative costs, and finally total costs. And I'm really glad we have an economist here, a real economist, because I am not an economist. First, let me tell you about the kinds of kids that participated and didn't participate. Participants tended to be slightly younger. 98% of participants were less than 9 years of age, compared to 66% of non-participants who were older than nine or nine. There was a higher participation among self-identified Hispanic children. 76% of participant families identified themselves as Hispanic versus 61% of non-participants. And going along with this, the correspondence language was more likely to be Spanish in the participants versus the non-participants, 56% versus 34%. We don't have exact breakdowns of student health insurance status for the entire schools, but we feel this is likely to be an overrepresentation of Medicaid and uninsured in our participants. 45% of children who came were Medicaid insured, 30% uninsured, only 15% were privately or SCHIP insured. 31%, approximately 3,000 children of enrolled students returned a consent form, 23% for seasonal with a range of 0 to 46% by school, and 18% for H1N1 with a range of 4 to 34%. And 93% of consented students were actually vaccinated with one or more flu vaccines. This graph shows the outcomes in terms of the students who received at least one flu vaccine was 28%, 21% received at least one seasonal flu vaccine, and 16% received at least one H1N1 vaccine. Among participants who received their first dose at Clinic 1 who required a second dose, 82% received the second dose. 93% of the first clinic participants received the intranasal and 7% received injectable. Now I want to move to costs, and as I said, I'm going to present cost per vaccine, and we've broken this down between the community vaccinator and the school system. As you can see, for the cost per vaccine administered for the community vaccinator was $16.41. About half of this cost was related to pre-clinic activities. 39% related to actual delivery on the day of the clinic, and 15% related to post-clinic activities, primarily billing. For the school system, the cost per vaccine administered was $5.30, and this was overwhelmingly related to pre-clinic costs. So this gives us a total of $21.72 per vaccine delivered. Now I want to highlight a few things that I'm going to make some points about later. There was a fair amount of duplication of effort in the pre-clinic efforts, and this, I think, really increased the costs unnecessarily. I'm going to talk about why that occurred a little bit later, but I want you to notice how much of the pre-clinic activity was actually done both by the school, first by the school, and then by the vaccinator. So this slide reports how many claims were reimbursed at all. In other words, some money came in. This isn't about how much. And it breaks it down by vaccine percent for vaccine claims and percent that reimbursed for administrative claims by each type of health insurance. So as you can see, for children who are privately insured, 35% of vaccine claims were reimbursed at all. 44% of administrative claims were reimbursed at all. For SCHIP, these numbers were better. 57% of vaccine claims were reimbursed at all, and 86% received some administrative reimbursement. Obviously, vaccine reimbursement is not relevant for those children receiving VFC, but for Medicaid, a whopping 92% did reimburse some for administrative claims, although, as I'm going to show you in the next slide, it was woefully inadequate. but at least they came through. This gives, for the total then, 43% of vaccine claims received some reimbursement, 75% received some administrative claims reimbursement. How much of the total costs were reimbursed in this first year? For privately insured children, 38% of vaccine costs were reimbursed, 21% of administrative costs, for a total of 28% of total costs for privately insured children. Among SCHIP patients, 72% of vaccine, 29% of admin, for a total of 44% of total costs. For Medicaid, the total was 29%, and overall then, the percent of total costs that were reimbursed overall was 23%. I want to draw your attention to a couple of things here. The administrative fee that was billed by the vaccinator was $12. Reimbursement by Medicaid in Colorado for administration is $6.44. So what were the reasons for denial of private claims? I'm just showing you an example here of the administrative claim denials, but they looked very much the same for the vaccine claim denials. And the most common reason was patients' deductible for about a third of the claims. Another common was that the common one was the service provided was out of network. And this is very important because this is something we could do something about. 20%, close to 20%, said, we don't recognize the school as a provider, therefore we will not pay for this. 15% said the service was not covered under the benefit plan, again, something that might be negotiated. 14% said the claim was not submitted properly. 8% the charges exceeded the fee schedule. 6% this benefit was included with payment for another routine procedure. That usually means with a well child care visit. And 5% the patient was not covered. There are important limitations to our data. No vaccine history was available for non-participants. Therefore, it's unclear whether the 30% that we successfully immunized was actually an increase in vaccine uptake or whether we shifted where vaccine was being received. Of course, the H1N1 pandemic occurred during implementation of the program, and this may have influenced participation one way or another, and it may have increased the cost of the program and the chaos associated. The program, because this was the first year of implementation, the program really didn't begin until mid-November because of all the problems with getting it going, and so that late start may have influenced participation. Some costs we had to estimate, and they were not based on direct observation. The program, most importantly, I think the program costs collected during the startup year are likely to be higher than in subsequent years, at least we certainly hope so. And our billing database limited the data we could collect related to denial of claims. So before concluding, I'd like to point out some of the important challenges that are particularly on our minds since we're now involved in year two of this project, and the challenges have been right in our face here, and I think they apply to any program that would be implemented. There are incredible competing demands placed on schools, obviously, and they are focused on seat time, so any health intervention that takes away from seat time is hard to sell, and that's a complicating factor that certainly affects participation by schools. In terms of insurance, there was clearly a lack of recognition by insurers of school-located vaccine clinics as acceptable sites for vaccination, and therefore they often turn down services. That's something that could be fixed, I think. There's difficulty obtaining insurance information from families, and it's time-consuming to verify. That's a tough thing to do. And there's limited reimbursement by insurers. Again, I think that there's something that can be done about that. There's also issues about required versus recommended vaccines. Some schools and school systems are much less supportive of vaccination programs for vaccines that are not required by law, such as flu. There is a fair amount of resistance to billing families for unpaid claims within a public school setting, and this is a very interesting one to me because, of course, we all get billed for all kinds of things like gym, athletic-related things, but for some reason, asking for payment at a public health at a public school setting for health services was really hard to sell. And then there's the big one, FERPA, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. And this is an act that protects the divulgence of any identifiable student educational data to anyone without permission. And there's a lot of different interpretations of FERPA, but FERPA can be interpreted pretty conservatively to include the fact that all immunization records that come into the school are actually educational records and therefore cannot be uploaded to a registry or cannot be shared with a public health source. So this increased the cost of conducting the program. It limited our ability to access any students, student information, immunization records. We didn't have, the schools would not upload to the registries, so we didn't have a complete record for that school. And it would hinder the ability to do a more targeted intervention, for example, for high-risk kids, for flu, that kind of thing. And it greatly complicated the process for obtaining and completing consents. So in conclusion, this school-located influenza vaccine program was feasible and effective in reaching 30%, even with a late start in year one. The uptake of services was greater for uninsured or Medicaid-insured students. The Medicaid reimbursement rates, which in our state are $6.44, were entirely inadequate to cover the administrative costs of the program. And reimbursement from private insurers for vaccine and administration fees were inadequate. But again, this was year one, and I think some of those problems could definitely be solved. But in conclusion, reimbursement will really need to be improved and efficiency increased in order to make this approach financially sustainable. I want to thank the CDC for funding this project. Thank you very much.